1 Corinthians chapter 10, if you have your Bible, and every heart's clear this morning. The apostle is giving a rundown, a little bit of history. It seems like he's given more than just a refresher course to the people of the Church of Corinth. You get down here a little ways and find out where he's going, then come back and reread the first part, the first several verses. We may get a different understanding of what he's saying or why he's saying what he's saying. Is it that the Church of Corinth thought themselves to be a little bit on the elite side? They were pretty good people. They had a fair amount of knowledge. Maybe they were smart people. And with their standing, with their increased standing, or good standing and increased knowledge, may have led them to have a feeling within themselves that they had a special inside track, or they were receiving special insight to where they were to say among themselves that an idol is nothing in the world. They just had some good insight. They had some smart things to say. But you come to verse number 12 of this chapter, and you find that Paul, in the midst of all that he has already said, he suddenly presents a pretty strong warning to his readers, his hearers. That strong warning is, "Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall." Now, the proverb writer gives us something along the same line in Proverbs chapter 16, where he says that pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before fall. You go over to Romans chapter 11, and you'll find that Paul is giving a measure of this kind of admonition in that chapter as well, when he said, "Be not high-minded, but fear." Within the context of that word fear, we would find humility. Not humiliation, but humility. Not being high-minded, but recognize who we are, what we are. Is it that Paul was telling the Corinthians, that Solomon was telling in the proverb, that Paul was talking about in Romans, that we are, as human beings, we are on probation as such. We are not in yet. We have not arrived. We've not crossed the finish line. There's a lot of people that we could reference, and we do reference. We think about in our mind, whether biblical accounts or personal accounts of people that we are aware of that stumbled before their arrival. Fell down in the race, made a drastic error in the ball game, thinking that everything was said, everything was finalized, it's just the last little bit, only to have something go wrong. What Paul's saying here in chapter 10 of Corinthians, in verse 12, "Let him that thinketh he's standing be careful, because it's possible of yet falling." Now, this word "stand" really means to be or continue in an upright Christian life, Christian character, Christian habits, and all of these would be in agreement with the profession. Can I come back again to a little cliche that we've been hearing a lot right here in recent weeks? What he's talking about is authentic Christianity. Being an authentic Christian. And when he says the word fall, what he's saying is that this is an act of inconsistency. Yielding to the tempter, stumbling over a stone of offense, or being caught in a snare that is laid. We could probably spend a fair amount of time, and I see that I have a little bit of time this morning to play with, but we could probably say that what Paul is attempting here is to put the people that he is responsible for spiritually on guard. He's wanting them to wake up and to realize that there's a concern here. He's saying, like Peter said, beware, pay attention. Have you ever been in a service? Probably it's more yesteryear than what we have today, but you're in a service and maybe your mind wandered a little bit and H.E. Darnell was preaching and suddenly his hand smacked the pulpit. Or somebody else was preaching and suddenly clapped their hands together and boy, immediately heads come up. Is that what's going on? Paul's clapping his hands. He's thumping the podium. He's saying, wake up here, pay attention, be cautious. And Peter uses the same kind of terminology. Because there is a real enemy that's trying to destroy, there is a real possibility of somebody getting so comfortable in the direction that they're going that they can stumble and fall. The admonition here that Paul gives in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 is admonition to the self-confident. It's directed to the self-confident, the person that thinks that they are able to stand on their own. They are self-confident. In other words, they are reliant upon their outward privileges. You take a look at it, and that's what's going on. The children of Israel had a real problem with being self-reliant or self-confident. They were relying on their outward privileges. Israel, the chosen nation, they were God's select people. But Paul clearly says that they were all part of that family, but they all did not make it. They all did not arrive. There were some, because of some stumbling or some falling, they were tripped up in the wilderness. They did not make it in to where they were going. They were self-confident. They were reliant upon also not only their self-confidence and their outward privileges, but they were reliant upon their personal strength, reliant upon their personal clean character. What was it that Peter said? Paraphrasing this morning, though I die with you, Lord, I am ready to go. I am ready. I can take it. I'm strong enough. I'm able. My character is such that I will go all the way to the end with you. I'm reminded of Adam and Eve. It must have been a phenomenal, fantastic situation that they lived in. It was a tranquil garden. Everything was peaceful. Everything was wonderful. They walked with God on a regular basis. On a regular basis, they heard God's voice. On a regular basis, it was just a tranquil place. It was peaceful. It was quiet. You know what happened. I don't need to go into that this morning, do I? You know what happened. Suddenly, things changed. Something happened. As much as we would like to think church is a tranquil garden, much as we'd like to think and much as we ought to endeavor, our homes should be a tranquil garden, place of peace, a place of quiet, and place where God comes to meet with us and we hear from God, where we can walk with God and All of those things that would create a tranquil place, but what we realize, we do not have Garden of Edens here in this life. We have some additional Bible college students here in our congregation this morning. There's some people that go to Bible college thinking that they can, if they can only some way get away from the lack of the tranquility of home, the lack of peacefulness at home, if they can get to a Bible college campus, surely there's a Garden of Eden there. Some people may even be deceived into thinking that their particular Bible college is the Garden of Eden. But I can assure you that the mountaintop in Cincinnati is not the Garden of Eden. I can assure you that the other Bible college campuses are not either the Garden of Eden, because at those places we find young people, and at places where young people gather especially to learn about God, there's going to be something to cause turmoil on that campus. If only I can get away from everything else, and if only I can be over here and do this and be a part of that, but we find that we cannot, in our own selves, in our own character, personal strength, we cannot make it. We cannot be reliant upon that. We find that he's talking to people that were self-reliant because of who they were. Maybe he's talking to people that were self-reliant because of their strengths and their character, but we also would see that he's speaking to people who were boastful. They were proud of these things. They were strong in them, and they really believed that they were able to stand. What is it that they would be saying? No, they wouldn't say it like this because they didn't have it like this. But was it that they could say, "I read my Bible every day"? Could it be that they were saying, "I pray every day"? Maybe they would even be willing to give a minute or an hour figure as to how much they pray or read every day. I do all of these things. It doesn't matter what we say we do or what a person can say that they are able to do or what they have done. Paul the Apostle in Galatians said, "Yes, and I have done more." Paul said, if there's anybody that has any reason or measure to boast in, he said, "I have it. I've got everything that you all talk about, everything that you all say, and more," he said. Sounds a little bit boastful on Paul's side, isn't it? You could probably say that he's sounding boastful, but he's trying to draw a comparison. And his comparison is, even as much as I have to be boastful in for myself, he said, "I glory in nothing but the cross of Jesus Christ." Now, what made him say that, perhaps, made it easy for him to say that, perhaps, is the very vivid reality in his mind of what he used to be. Maybe that's what caused him to realize it. But the fact of the matter is, even though I was not a Saul of Tarsus, and even though you were not a Saul of Tarsus, it doesn't matter what we did. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And because of that sin, we are equal to Saul of Tarsus in transgression. And I have nothing to boast, along with Paul, I have nothing to boast in, except for the cross of Jesus Christ, who was crucified for the world, and I unto it. Man recorded in the Bible, they've fallen, they give further warning. It seems as though the people at their strongest points are the ones that fall the hardest. Wasn't Moses considered to be the meekest of all men? And yet, what is it that is said about Moses? He sinned unadvisedly with his lips. Peter was brave. He was bold. And yet we find that for moral courage, the lack of moral courage, he denied his Lord. That's an incredible thought. It's an incredible statement. In the midst of all that Peter said, the moral courage is what caused him to deny. The lack of moral courage caused him to deny his Lord. look at the Apostle John. He's the one that Jesus loved. You read in the book of John, in the Gospel of John, and John has developed the name from what he has written, that he is the apostle of love. But wasn't John one of those that desired to call down fire from heaven? Loving John. What makes a person do that? Samson, the strongest of men, fell. David, the man after God's own heart, fell. Solomon, the wisest of all men, the one that was able to give all kinds of wonderful wisdom, nuggets of wisdom and proverbs to people, drew the attention of the world around him and the nations around him. People came to see and to experience his wisdom, and yet there's a great question in a lot of theologians' mind today if Solomon is in heaven. Hesitant to even say such a thing. Did Solomon make it? Then there's the big, bold Elijah. You know, Elijah was just, he wasn't afraid to rebuke the king to his face. But as soon as Jezebel turned her snarling lips and her murderous eyes in his just turned in his direction, we find that Elijah runs away, and in essence, he's begging God to kill him. I'm all done, Lord. It's all over with. I'm the only one left. Get me out of here before she gets me. Sometimes we find it in our own lives and people around us, our own acquaintances or friends, somebody that falls or somebody that commits an atrocity. You'll find it said, you'll read it, you'll see it in places. People will say, I can't believe that they would have done such a thing. There's no way that they're capable of doing that. Oh, he wouldn't have done that. There's no way. Maybe that's why he did it, or she. Because they thought they were safe. Because they thought that they could not fall. They did not take precautions against falling. Read the news. You don't have to read very far, but you'll find that there are some atrocities that are done in society. I'm talking about atrocities that would just reading the headlines can really make your heart quiver. You don't have to read the entire article. You can just read the headlines and find out that society's a mess. There's some people in our society, there's some people in our country that surely have something wrong upstairs. Twisted. I'm not talking about a learning disability. I'm talking about a mental impairment that you and I can't even begin to comprehend. Not because we're so smart, just because our minds don't travel in that channel. We're not even close to the same channel. And yet somebody will say, well, I can't believe they would do that. And somebody would say, well, preacher, I would never do that. You know, I mentioned that last week. I would never do that. You know, once again, we have to be reminded if it's not but by the grace of God in our lives. You say, well, yeah, but that is so far out. But what if, way back, you see, it goes way back, the choices that we made or the choices that was made for us that began to steer us in this direction rather than in that direction. Sometimes it's a little comical. Some of you don't even know the name Jeffrey Dahmer. That's more of my era, I suppose, but he was a mass murderer of my era of years ago. And in reading the book about him, somebody, the author, I guess, was saying in the midst of the study of his life, he was contributing that direction that Jeffrey went into becoming a mass murderer. He was attributing the first step in that direction of taking little minnows and little fish and bringing them up onto the back porch of his house and stomping them with his feet. How many of us little boys did stuff like that when we were kids? I'm maybe not fish, but you know, there was something that little boys do. They just... But we didn't go that direction. We had grace. We had somebody steering. We had somebody to tell us, you don't do that. Don't do that again. And then there was a force to emphasize the do not do that again. If it wasn't for God's grace, there I could be. There's a man by the name of Azael, however you want to pronounce him. Hazael is the way it is. There we go. His name is found in 2 Kings chapter 8. Read the story. He's told by the king to go find the prophet. He goes and looks up the prophet. He's wanting to find out what is to come, what is to take place, what is to happen. And the king or the prophet tells this Hazael, he said, God tells me that you're going to be the king someday. I suppose that at that point, Hazael began to have a little bit of a puffed up attitude. But before that happened, something else takes place that infuriates the man. Because the prophet said, you are going to destroy Israel. You are going to be one of the cruelest men around. You're going to kill. You're going to murder. You're going to... You just read it. It's gory. Take a look at it. It's unbelievable what the prophet is saying to Hazael that he is going to do. He's not saying, Hazael, you're going to cause this. He said, you're going to do this. Hazael becomes infuriated. He said, what are you doing? Are you saying that I am a dog? I wish that we could really get the emotion of that passage, but I'd say that it's much deeper than what I just expressed. You see, what the thing is that this challenge was given or this rebuke was given. Hazael, you're on the wrong path. You're going down the wrong direction, and this is the way you're going, and this is the way you're going to end up. And he could not believe it. He said, I am not that kind of a person. Then he said, and he hears from the prophet that he is going to be the king. And so he goes back to the king, and the king said, what did he say? And he said, everything's going to be well. I believe it said that night, Hazael murders the king and then becomes the king himself. Now, he was just moments before infuriated that somebody would think that he could do those atrocities. What is it? Pride goeth before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. Don't be high-minded, but fear. He that thinketh he standeth, take heed lest he fall. David recognized his frailty. He recognized that he needed to rely on God. He needed to go to God for strength. He said in Psalms, he said over and over again that he needed to go to God. He said, bow down and hear me. I am poor and needy. He's crying out to God. He said, I will look unto the hills from whence cometh my help. My help cometh from thee, O God. Solomon gives warning after warning. He said, lean not to thine own understanding, but in all thy ways acknowledge him. He shall direct thy paths. See, there's reason for caution. There's reason for warning. It sounds as though it's an impossibility. It sounds like there's no way out. But let me give to you some effective remedies against spiritual fall. Say, I'm listening. Are you listening? Yes, preacher, I'm listening. If self-confidence is of no avail, where can safety be found? Could it be found in verse 13 of this chapter in 1 Corinthians? It's a verse that we cling to. But what does the word escape mean down near the end when it's talking about temptation? And all temptation is common to man. It's not that the temptation you're facing, you're the only one. It's common. There's so many people that have faced it beforehand. Temptation comes. God gives a way of escape. Escape. What? Does that mean that suddenly in the midst of temptation there's a trap door where I can slip away and disappear and whoosh, everything's okay? Kind of makes it sound simple, makes it sound easy. I don't quite think that that's the way it is. He said that there's a way of escape. That way of escape would involve humility of spirit. Humility of spirit. Self-distrust. It would mean and include a simple trust in the protecting and the preserving and the delivering power of God. A simple trust, not a complex trust where we have to badger our mind to come into and to grab a hold or to grip what is necessary for us to maintain or to stand, but a simple trust where we simply rely. Carefully, but simply rely upon God. The safety can be found, or the way of escape can be found in our watchfulness. Not allowing our guard to relax. Not allowing the guard to relax. But we arm ourselves. Having done all to stand, Paul said, stand therefore, having your loins girt, having the sword, having the shield, having the helmet, the breastplate, your feet shod. Having done all to stand, a watchfulness. A way of escape would also include one other aspect that we must not forget. We must not lose sight of. Humility is important. Self-distrust is necessary. A simple trust in God is vital. The watchfulness is so important to our steadfastness. But in the midst of all of those things, in the midst of these, we must also be waiting prayerfully, praying, seeking God, waiting upon God. Someone here this morning may say, well, preacher, I'm not battling. The enemy's not fighting. I hope that's not the statement of somebody this morning, because that would probably indicate that you're not standing. You've already fallen. The tripping has already taken place. You ever been to a ball game? You ever been to playing a ball game and the score is lopsided? Something happens and a shift of that lopsided score takes place. And the outcome is different from what you originally thought. Friday night, the score was lopsided, and some people began to make comment about how lopsided the score was, and somebody else spoke up and said, be careful. So many words, be careful, it can slip away pretty quick. Coming from experience, because it can. He that thinketh he standeth, take heed lest he fall. Be not high-minded, but fear. In other words, what we're finding here in these passages, in these little nuggets of Scripture, is that we are to take heed, that we are to beware, we are to pay attention. Take heed, lest he fall. Let's stand together this morning. We need God's help day by day, moment by moment. Keep us on the path, walking close to Him. Trust you have a good day. Thank you for your attention, for your attendance. Trusting the Lord's blessing to be upon you today. Keep His hand upon you. Remember the Lord's day to keep it holy. Praise God. Tim, would you dismiss us in prayer?